Today on Rocket Pop Reviews, we dive into the mind of Inside Out 2, Disney's 2024 sequel to the smash hit of 2015, the movie that made audiences cry over an imaginary friend and rethink our emotional headquarters. So how's the sequel? It's a mixed bag, not nearly as insightful or as funny as the first, but it does offer an interesting look at puberty and the social anxiety that often comes with it. So, as a Christian parent, is it worth a watch with your kids? Is Inside Out 2 helpful for understanding the chaos and tumult of tweendom? Is there value here? We're going to talk about all of that today, so buckle up as we blast off to Inside Out 2 today on Rocket Pop Reviews.
Rocket Pop is go.
Welcome to Rocket Pop Reviews, giving Christian families a reliable source for reviews of movies, shows, books, and podcasts.
Every four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
We're serious about the fun of entertainment.
Nice to be in
orbit. Roger, 0G, and I feel fine.
And now your hosts, Steve Manuel and Jeff Davenport.
You know, before we go into Inside Out 2, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Inside Out 1?
You know what I think about when I think about Inside Out 1? I think about Richard Kind as Bing Bong. That's it.
That's what stuck with you, huh?
Bing Bong. One of the greatest animated character names of all time would be Bing Bong. I think I remember thinking they did a great job with Inside Out. And as you're going to hear me comment on Inside Out 2, there's something in me that is a little bit, I feel unbalanced when an unbelieving worldview is trying to make a map of the human soul. Hmm. And there are some movies that get into that territory. And we're getting very definitive comments on the interior life of a person, but it is not from a biblical worldview. So is that the great danger of life? No. Does the Bible say you must never consider anyone else's worldview? No. It just puts me in kind of weird waters. So that's what I throw out. And it was very well done. And as cleverly done as Pixar movies always are, and et cetera.
I love Inside Out 1. I just think it's great. It was directed and co-written. I think it was the idea of a believer guy. I can't say it's fully Christian, but there are so many insights just about emotions that I love. It had three things going for me. One, I felt like it had something good and profound to say about the fact that, look, you can't just go through life thinking happiness is my goal, which I think we would agree that's a fairly biblical idea. Yep. That the true human comes alive when they have all of these emotions, including sadness. Sadness is a part of life. I thought that the plot worked in how it was all structured. Yes. You know, you're doing this strange thing of like, we got emotions in the head and those are characters, right, but then they're inside the head of the main character. It's all very odd, and yet it worked. And
I remember the pitch for Inside Out before it came out. And I remember hearing they're going to make emotions characters and we're going to get into the psyche of a little girl. And I thought, I'm out. Hmm. This is ethereal and is not going to lead anywhere. And when I watched it, I thought, well, they pulled it off. It's pretty good.
Yes. And the third thing is, doggone it, it was funny. Bing Bong, genuinely funny. When they go, let's see what it's like in the dream factory in your brain, making dreams at night. Super funny. When yes. Pixar's at its best, they're clever. Like yes. They're not doing the first layer of joke. They're doing they're going the 10th layer down and going, oh, now I wouldn't have thought of that. And I just thought Inside Out is a perfect example of them hitting that.
If we can continue commenting on what Pixar does well, I have noticed over the years, starting with Toy Story, they're so in their lane. They kind of do what a great stand-up comedian does, which is they take this thing that we all know and they put a logic behind it and go, that's why sleepwalking happens sometimes.
Right.
That's why you drool in your sleep. Or go to Toy Story, and that's what it means to have a name written on a toy. And we go, oh, it's kind of like they draw these kind of, there's a phony logic behind what they do. And it's really fun.
They're very smart about it. We go on and on about Pixar. Maybe do a whole episode about Pixar good and bad, what they do great and where they go to. Side. So we were talking about Inside Out, but this is the sequel, Inside Out 2. Almost, I think it's like 9 years later it came out. Here's the plot. Inside Out 2, 13-year-old Riley, the same main character to some degree from the first one, she's got new emotional challenges because she's hit puberty and she's headed off to this high-stakes high school hockey camp. And just as her core emotions, the ones we met in the first movie, joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust, they think they've got things under control. Well, this puberty alarm goes off, which when I saw that in the trailer, I was like, okay, I'm interested in this. I've got young daughters. They're hitting that age. I want to know what's going on in them. And that puberty alarm signals an upgrade to the headquarters, and they got new emotions. They've got anxiety, envy, embarrassment, and ennui. And anxiety is really the main one in this movie. Anxiety quickly takes charge, believing Riley has to change to fit in with the older players who she wants to impress, and the sidelines joy, who's really the main emotion in her head and all the others. As Riley's sense of self becomes driven by fear of failure and these social pressures, she pushes away from her old buddies and she just spirals into this identity crisis. And after this emotional meltdown, basically a panic attack, anxiety realizes she's overwhelmed Riley totally, and instead of helping her, and so everything works out supposedly better in the end. So that's the plot. As we're talking about craft, as I read that plot, I think anybody would go, okay, that seems similar to the first movie. I think I can track that. That said, I didn't feel like reading the plot, I go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Watching it, it doesn't quite add up that cleanly. Did you feel the same way?
Yes. For instance, they set up that these new emotions are kind of building out an adultish palette for this person, this girl that we're watching, Riley. And as the movie goes on, you start to see, for instance, anxiety kind of turns into the bad guy of the movie. And I'm left wondering at the end of the movie, well, is there any place for anxiety which would be appropriate? Or is there a healthy place for anxiety? It's played out as if anxiety running things is a bad idea. But maybe if anxiety would submit to the team of emotions, things might be more balanced. But yes, it felt, I wasn't sure who the bad guy was, who we're rooting for. There were times when I started to not like the main character and go like, I don't know, are we rooting for her? Because sometimes it feels like kind of the queen that was it's not said that way, but in the first movie, the kind of leader of the emotions is Joy. And we like Joy. I like the way she's drawn. I like her little feet. And in this movie, Joy is being pushed to the side and we want Joy to come back in charge. And I actually had the thought while watching the film, is Joy the main character of this film, or
yes,
is Riley the main character?
Joy is, think so, in both movies.
Okay.
When it comes to craft, let's talk about some of the good stuff, and then we'll talk about the not great stuff. And by the way, this was directed by someone different, different personnel. One of the co-writers was the same. So you kind of have a whole switchover regime to some degree. I'm sure Pete Docter, who's a muckety muck now at Pixar, still had a lot of oversight over this. Some of the things I enjoyed, there's a moment at the beginning where the puberty alarm goes off and the girl, Riley, is having these hormones and it's making her just turn corners. And her mom's coming in to wake her up for hockey camp and suddenly she's really upset and then suddenly she's really bored and it just going through. And I watched it laughing because I've seen this in my daughter. Like, sure. You've seen this happen, and movies are great when they help you understand a human. And I think I went into this with sort of an open mind and felt like, yeah, anything that's going to help me understand what's going on with my 12-year-old daughter right now. It's that, I'm an older man. My emotions have kind of, to some degree, leveled out. Hopefully I don't have moments like that. So it's easy for me to look at my daughter and go, you're crazy. What are you doing? Well, no. she's got this stuff going off in her head. And this is just it was both a funny and true depiction of sometimes how a kid can change like this in a moment. Did you like that?
Yes. I mean, comedy does this. You can get this out of a TV show. You can get this out of certain movies. But when what you recognize as familiar in your life is blown out and you see it on the screen, okay, well, our daughters aren't quite doing what Riley does in the movie, but it's so funny because it rings true. And I had a funny thought watching her go through these stages. I thought to myself, I need to not overreact so much as a parent. When she does this stuff, I got to let it happen. It's okay.
That's right.
But I remember also thinking to myself in that, I guess this is all happening, I don't know, first and second act, really, seeing this stuff happen. And I remember thinking, watching all of the emotions kind of jockey for position, that's really fun. It's really fun that they set up that scenario and watching the girl's behavior and watching anger jump to the front and he gets to press a bunch of buttons and et cetera. It was a really fun part of the movie.
And I feel like all of that you're talking about was done better in the first movie. So I do wonder how I would have seen this movie if the first movie hadn't existed. I wonder if I would feel warmer about it. But anyway, I felt like a lot of that was done better in the first. A few other things I appreciate about this one. There's this one little tiny character. There's a new emotion that sort of comes in, nostalgia. And she's an old lady. She's hilarious. You're like, bring us more of her. But you're like, no. There's just enough of her.
Just to give away the joke, everyone says in response, we're not ready for you yet. She's too young. And they keep pushing her out of the room and close the door behind her.
Remember when we, no, we're not doing that. It's great. I thought Ennui was great. I was surprised they didn't use Ennui more.
I thought the same thing.
Because that's cool tween is like, yes. I don't care.
Whatever.
I also felt like, so I liked Ennui. I wish they used her more. I loved embarrassment. And we know that tweens, like, that's their overarching thing.
I know.
I didn't feel like they used him enough.
I thought many times that some of the other emotions should have checked with embarrassment and seen, is it okay for me to do this?
Ah, yes.
And he should have had more of a referee kind of a place, but he just kind of waited in the background with his big hoodie on.
So from a craft standpoint, nostalgia looked perfect. Ennui, little French lady laying on a divan, perfect. Embarrassment, giant pink in a hoodie, and he closes the hoodie up. What a great design. Like, that's great. And I'm going to contrast this here in a moment with anxiety. A few other things I liked. It didn't quite work for me, but I know my daughters really loved Bloofy, where she's got this, she's remembering this childhood show that's kind of like Dora or Mickey Mouse with Pouchy. It's drawn as a two-dimensional thing when we're in this three-dimensional world.
Which is very fun to see.
She's also got in her brain, she has these memories of this, I guess it's like Link in Zelda type character, Lance Switchblade. And he's a video game character who can't quite move in the right way to get through things. And you're watching it going, oh, you animators, you loved this. You nailed this down.
And there's, if I can throw in, there's also a little interstitial that's made with construction paper. I love when we do mixed media in an animated movie because it's such a break and you feel like, oh yeah, we get to go to this little world for a second. Oh, that's kind of funny. And then we're back into what we know. I find it always refreshing and they used it in really fun ways.
And my cynical part goes, well, because it worked in the first one. That's why they did it in this one. It's really done well in the first one. I think you and I would also go, one of the reasons we like it is because it reminds us of Calvin and Hobbes. Bill Watterson would go, I'm kind of tired. Like, what can I do to mess with this?
Yes.
I want to talk about the scene that I liked the most in the movie that I watched and felt like, wow, that works. And it's a scene later in the movie. What ends up happening is anxiety is taking over Riley's brain because she just wants to fit in. She wants to impress these people. So anxiety has taken over the control deck. And Joy and the team of other emotions are trying to take anxiety down. And I'll just say, anxiety is not unfamiliar to me as a human being. So I was watching this movie going, I want to know, can you can you show me what's going on in my head when I'm trying to deal with anxiety? And there was a scene where anxiety is now running things. She's almost like a big brother image on a giant screen over this room full of animators. It's funny. It's meant to look like Disney animators, a bunch of these animators. And she's saying to them, look, everybody, this is what she said. She goes, let's set up every possible thing that could go wrong in Riley's life. We are looking to the future, every possible mistake she could make. And so they're writing down, what about this? And she puts it up on the screen. Yes. What if she embarrasses herself this way? What about this? And she's just putting this up over and over again. And I was watching this and I know I was on the verge of tears because I was going, that's what I feel like when I let anxiety take me over. Wow. And these animators are at their desks and Joy and team come in, they go, and they say this, they go, they're using Riley's imagination against her. And so they start, Joy and the team start to talk to the animators and go, maybe something with a kitty cat. And so they start writing happy things and suddenly, you know, but what if she wins the hockey game? What if she impresses? And suddenly everything starts to change. And Joy says to the animator, she goes, don't listen to anxiety. She's using these horrible projections to change Riley. Then anxiety says, Joy, I'm doing this all for you. It's all so Riley can be happier. And then as it all comes crashing down around anxiety, she says this, she goes, but we need to be prepared. And I just thought that is a great depiction of what anxiety can be like, where your brain is going, I am putting up every scenario that could go wrong and taking them all seriously, as opposed to, okay, that's a possibility, but what good things could happen? You just see what it's like from a creative standpoint for anxious thoughts to take you over.
Okay, Jeff, I need you to give me a little bit of space here because
I'll leave if you want.
I'm going to ramble just a little bit. Okay, I'm teaching a class right now that has to do with some of these things. And for instance, I'm teaching the class. It's a Bible-y, churchy class. One of the things that we say in the class is that emotions, biblically speaking, are terrible leaders. They are good followers. So we would never pursue something out of emotion. For instance, we would never say that worship was good worship because tears came to my eyes. We shouldn't. A mature person shouldn't. We should say worship is legitimate because it squares with a biblical instruction. God receives the benefit of the worship. And whether I felt wonderful about it or not, it really doesn't matter. It's neither here nor there. So I come at emotions from that kind of standpoint where I for myself, I think this is biblical and I teach others, we mustn't trust emotions or give them too much sway. Now, so when Inside Out 1 came out, I went like this on guard. And now when I heard, now Inside Out 2 is coming and one of the main characters will be anxiety, I immediately went like this again, thinking they're going to give airtime to an emotion that 30 years ago wasn't even mentioned for children. Anxiety? Why in the world would a 13-year-old suburban American have anxiety? I'm not saying that's a legitimate comment, but that's what somebody would think if they look at 100 years of American history. What is the anxiety? Oh, you know, you have to pick between friends or like you don't know which hobby you want. You know, I'm thinking of a 1970s parent going like, how good do you have it? Are you crazy? You didn't grow up on the farm. You didn't get up at 4 to milk the cows. So I know that that's a real thing, but I really feel like as a parent, my job is to really keep those feelings at bay. And if anything, with my children, I want to paint up worry, anxiety, fear, self-consciousness. I put those all in the buckets of sin. I don't want my child to experience any of those things. Matter of fact, if anxiety comes knocking, I want them to, forgive me for sounding very spiritual, I would like them to talk to God about it, confess it, and get it out of their heart. So I know that's a very kind of a spiritual rant, but when I'm trying to answer the question, what is the messaging of this movie and is it helpful for a Christian young person? I've already told you I resonate with some of the pictures, the way that they're depicting the struggles of a child coming, you know, in adolescence. I understand that. I empathize with what I see. And I'm wondering while I'm watching this, you talking about that picture of anxiety, what happens, the solution to anxiety? I remember thinking in that scene where there's all the animators drawing up all the possible things that could happen. I remember kind of almost hitting an internal pause button and thinking, as a Christian, what do I think is the solution to this moment? What is supposed to happen here? The Spirit of God is the answer to that question. This is what I would say to anybody. We're commanded scripturally to arrest your thoughts, to bring them underneath submission to a biblical truth, and to confess sin as sin. I'm sorry for bringing the word sin into a movie review, but when I consider this whole process that's happening, there is a resolution that happens in the movie, and of course, you wouldn't expect it to. It has nothing to do with God. That's usually fine in a movie, that we don't bring God into it, because that's not everybody's worldview. But we are getting into the interior world of, we're trying to diagnose the human condition and the human psyche. And I wonder, it's an open question, is it malpractice to expose our children to a solution, some kind of resolution to the problem of the human condition that doesn't have anything to do with sin or confession or coming to God? The one thing that I loved in the movie, I was definitely cheering for it, is when our girl, Riley, comes to her senses and she realized, I have been controlled by emotion. We get a good, this is so rare today, we get a good, meaty apology for her behavior.
She asks her friends, I hope in time you can forgive me.
I was thinking, could I show this scene to all the kids in the carpool that I drive? And they would take responsibility for their behavior and say, I was wrong, please forgive me. That I loved.
Real quick, any other Disney movie, she's going, look, I'm on my own journey. And look, if that impacted you, it impacted you, but I've got to figure myself out.
Jeff, we reviewed Wicked. That's exactly what happened in Wicked, which is my behavior is justified because of what I've been through. Hmm. And I don't know why that wasn't done in this movie. Can I insert into messaging just a little bit? I have these sensitivities to, are we allowed to say this, to some woke kind of feeling. There was kind of a DEI glaze on the whole movie that I'm sensitive to. I felt it from the beginning. And I was so pleased that did not inform this resolution. This is the company that's bringing us, you know, a new invention of Snow White that doesn't include her being rescued by a prince, you know. What? So I'm always kind of on my guard for that kind of messaging. And I was so pleased with the resolution of Inside Out too.
Let's say that when it comes to morality or dealing with emotions in this case, we're looking at this movie and there's two things. There's the problem and there's the solution.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say the solution by the end is full wrong. I'm with you. Yes. How does a pagan possibly get their emotions to work in a way that's honoring right. for their lives? They can't. They're going to come up short. I halfway thought, no, I was like this with the movie when I thought, I bet at the end, anxiety is a welcome addition to the team. And we need you. It wasn't that. So right. I was happy with that. I think for me, this movie succeeded, and it wasn't a full success, but it succeeded when it talked about when anxiety takes things over. Instead of going, yes, we're an anxious generation.
That's true.
So I will praise the movie for this. Yes. I'm with you. It is a little weird to try to expect the end to be, so let's get the Lord Savior Jesus Christ to come.
I know.
So I'm with you. But it didn't play into this Abigail Schreier bad therapy thing that she talks about.
Yeah.
Like, you are your problems. I really felt like by the end, Riley kind of, you know, she wasn't thinking this, but like, I don't need this anxiety stuff. Like I can be fine. I can be fine with all of that. And that to me, that led to somewhere good.
Yeah. And I really loved how they demonstrated that when a girl, I mean, I guess this applies to boys too, but when a young teen lets her need to feel approved and accepted drive all of her decisions, it takes you down a bad road. So I liked that message, and I'm surprised that it came from the Disney Corporation and pleased.
Well, I know you say that you would say I'm surprised by Disney, but I'm more surprised that there's two ditches. One ditch is don't be like everybody else. Like if you try to fit in like that, you are going to get run over. That's the message of this. The other message is you be you, girl. You go do that thing.
That's what I expected.
And I don't think it did. I think it didn't really touch this, but it did hit the peer pressure thing, I guess. Like, look, I mean, if we're raising girls who we want them to be strong believers, they better look at that person whose approval they want and go, well, I'd like you to like me, but I'm going to be the Jesus follower that I'm meant to be.
Right.
And your approval, that's subsumed to this.
Right.
I felt like it didn't land in a Riley, you be you, girl. It didn't.
That's true.
It didn't head in that direction.
That's true.
A couple other things. This might bump back to craft, but we keep talking about anxiety. One of the things I didn't like about this movie is, God bless her. I've seen her in other things. She's in Asteroid City, but the woman who played Anxiety, I thought was woefully miscast. It's Maya Hawke. She's the daughter of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman, and she's just kind of flat. Like, give me a great comedian, I think, somebody who can add something to it. I just felt like it was not... Anxiety could have been funny and insightful, funny and dangerous. It just more felt like... It felt like it was from a different show.
Right. It's funny that you say that, because in an animated movie, how often do you even think that's the wrong voice? But that crossed my mind specifically with Anxiety. That's the wrong voice.
Yes, I didn't care for that. Another thing I didn't care for, I'd forgotten about this, and then I was asking my wife about the movie this morning. I said, what did you like about it? What did you not like about it? And she said this, and I was like, oh, I can't believe I forgot that. I love this. In the original movie, Riley's 10, 11, something like that. And so they set up the worlds in her brain. And there's friendship world and silly world and there's all a fun world and there's all these worlds. And one of the best one they keep bringing up in the first one is family world.
Yes.
And when she's with her family, that movie chokes me up because her family, Bing Bong is not in that. Family is her family. It's her mom and her dad. And when things are going great, Family Island is just, oh, it's the best. Yes. And at the end of the movie, she kind of runs away from home and Family Island starts to get destroyed. And it's and then at the end, it comes back to life. Well, in this movie, they very clearly say, well, now she's a tween or whatever. And they look out and Family Island, the lights are a little dimmer. And that's just what happens. And my wife and I are both going, No. The light should come on even more during this season. And I said to Chris, my wife, what would you want? She said, granted, mom and dad are not in this much. They send her away to hockey camp, so mom and dad aren't an issue. I don't have a problem with that as far as a screenwriting thing goes. But boy, wouldn't it have been great when she's on the hard times? My wife was saying, like, what if she remembered something that mom had said and family life comes on? Or, gosh, dad struggled with anxiety. I saw this play out with him and the lights come on. That would have been so beautiful.
Yes.
The last thing we want as parents of tweens and teenagers is to go, well, they're just going to kind of, you know.
That's exactly right. They are reiterating the American story, which is your home that you come from, your family of origin, is your launching pad. And when you turn 18 years old or whatever, they wave bye-bye and wish you luck.
Right.
And so they're showing us, this is the American media story. They're showing us, well, now she's in the process of leaving the nest. And that begins, I suppose, at puberty. And then it ends with the driveway to college, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And we don't believe that story. That's not a biblical story. And so I love you making that point, Jeff, that we're a believer, the one putting this story together, we would say it's going to continue to be her family that guides her through these choices, and the soft landing spot at the end of her internal struggles will be back with her family.
Yeah. Let's finish up with family fit. From a just content perspective, there's really nothing objectionable here. There's no cursings or naked animated characters or anything like that. But the thematic stuff, it's funny. You see, this is PG. Why? For thematic material. Well, what does that mean? They're talking about deep things of the, yes, of the heart and of the mind,
yes,
that a 6 or 7 year old won't get. They'll get like, oh, she's playing hockey, and oh, the balls are all falling in the brain, and okay, there's these characters here, and oh, that's kind of funny and silly. But it is challenging the viewer. This goes back to your point earlier. It's getting into deep things. And yep, anytime a movie gets into deep things, I'm with you, you kind of put your dukes up, but you recognize you need to be responsible here if you're going to expose children to this. So amen. From a content standpoint, there's no issues. I would say it's from a how willing are you to have, because I firmly believe that this movie can lead to some great conversations. How willing are you as a parent to talk your 10-year-old, we'll say 11, 12-year-old through these things and go, ooh, we just saw this. How is we as believers, how should we respond to anxiety? Does it have a place in our lives? How should we respond to fear, anger, any of these things? I think going to your point earlier, we have to be real careful that we don't let our emotions run the show. If we do, we're going to end up in really bad places. I think if I had to boil this movie down, again, I don't like it as much as the first movie for a number of reasons, but if I had to boil this movie down, it's better at talking about the problem than it is at the solution. And yet I think that problem and the way it's articulated is so good, it's worth a view with maybe an older kid to talk with them about the things they will experience to some degree and how to deal with those things.
Yeah, I'm going to pile on what you said, which is I was thinking of myself. My daughters are at a perfect age to watch this movie, for us to talk about it, and after the movie to layer on, well, this is how we would deal with that as believers. I would say around the age of 12 is perfect for this, and anything over that. Personally, I wouldn't want my 8-year-old to see this for things that I've already mentioned before. I don't want them to, as you say, they're going to be looking at fun colors and action and emotions and go, fun movie. But what I would worry about for my 8-year-old is them remembering some little minor thing of this movie and thinking that's how we work. Hmm. My command, forgive me for quoting a Bible verse as part of a movie review, Ephesians 6:4, it says, fathers, we're to train up our children, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's the foundation we're trying to lay for our children. I think there's stuff in this movie that could lay foundations for your younger children that are not the Lord. So it's something that if you feel the foundation is laid for your 11-year-old, 12-year-old, you could watch this movie. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it talks about their emotions. They would probably like to talk with you through them, the way that they're seeing this movie. I think that's all terrific. I think it's dangerous for a younger child, and that they would need, it's not that they would need talking through the movie. As you say, most of it would go over their heads. It's that it would give them a false understanding of how people work.
Yes. So I think our headline on Family Fit would be 12 and up with parental commentary. And that's it, right. It could lead to some great things. Last thing I'll leave you with, it's one of the things I didn't like about this movie, but I just put a button on it. They set up over and over again, Riley has a deep, dark secret. Riley has a deep, dark secret. Riley has a deep, dark secret. And I thought, oh, Pixar, this is when you shine. When you finally reveal this thing, it's going to be so fun and so great. So there's this post-credit sequence. We finally get to it and we go, oh, that wasn't interesting or funny or anything. So, and that's when I went, it doesn't have the A game, at least right, entertainment-wise and clever-wise, that Inside Out 1 had, comes up short.
That's right.
So We hope this is helpful for you. We'll see you next time.
3, 2, 1, 0.
Thanks for listening to Rocket Pop Reviews. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. See you next time for another family-friendly review.